Hi, and welcome to Let's Talk Safety. I'm your host, Dylan Sutherland from Protector Safety Gear. Throughout this series, we'll be interviewing industry experts to provide our audience with valuable insights on various categories of PPE. Topics will range from selection and standards to maintenance and care. This should ultimately assist you in selecting fit-for-purpose safety solutions for your site. From these discussions, we will create resources such as Toolbox Talk downloads and blogs, all of which will be available on our website, www.protector.co.za, for download.
Please note this recording was carried out in April 2024 and was a viewpoint to date. It must be noted that there have been serious adjustments in the training space linked to the CETAs and government. This space is ever-changing, and an updated podcast will be carried out with RWH once the dust settles and it is very clear on a way forward.
Welcome, Lozani. Thank you so much for joining us. Lozani is the quality manager at the RWH. Maybe briefly just walk us through your experience and exposure, particularly to the CETAs within your career. I think there's quite a bit of value there.
Hi, thanks, Dylan. So I ended up or started off by being a hairdresser and decided I wanted to go into education more, and worked at Centurion Academy, and then from there did my facilitator, assessor and moderators course, and started working more with the CETAs with regards to qualifications, the uploading, the moderation, internal moderation, external moderation and so forth. I also worked for Services CETA and in doing external moderations for a few years. So that is where it all started. And then Alti Kriel, the CEO of the professional body, started working for, she worked at the services CETA full time, and she ended up helping them getting off the ground. And she asked me to then step in and help.
Maybe quickly take us through, what is the RWH for those people that haven't come across it?
So the RWH has two legs. We've got the trade association and then the professional body. The trade association looks after or assists the industry with projects and health and safety or work at height on that side, where the professional body looks at education and training. We are a SACWA registered professional body, and we help the training providers in going forward with training and making sure our training providers does the right thing with regards to what's happening with the CETAs and SACWA and so forth.
Fantastic. So the purpose for this this podcast is we're trying to bring fit-for-purpose discussions to people that actually make decisions and need to make decisions for other people's safety. As a company, Protector generally chooses its associations and partners based off of our own principles, which is fit for purpose. We're not here to sell something just to make a sale. We want to make sure we protect somebody. From our perspective, the RWH brings a hell of a lot of certainty when it comes to the process and quality, because I don't think in the past 7 years of us being registered with the CETAs, we've necessarily been appropriately audited or asked appropriate questions, which we'll get into now. But that's our perspective on the CETA, and on the RWH. How do you see the RWH performing, let's call it a fit-for-purpose function to the industry?
The RWH develop a lot of good practice notes to tell them, the industry, what is best to do. For example, we develop LNQs. That is qualifications that's not unit standards, but should have been unit standards. So we develop programs for industry to use to be safer and have competence, not in a unit standard, but in a approved program. We also do audits, additional audits over the CETAs, what they're supposed to do or do. We visit our training providers, make sure that they do the right thing, do their uploads and so forth. So, yeah, we really try and get the word out there with regards to what is needed to be safe in the industry.
Cool. Let's get into the, well, we'll come back to the LNQs because I think that's quite an important component of this discussion. But what I do want to understand is, and I get it, CETA has hundreds of thousands of service providers in, from hairdressing to work at heights to, I don't know, everything. I would assume anything that has to do with training. Can you walk us through quickly just what, and very briefly, you don't have to get into detail, on what the process is to get registered, let's say for unit standard 22998, you're doing work at heights. What would that process look like from a provider with the CETA?
It would look long and tedious. So you would have to be accredited first. The professional body cannot, unfortunately, assist the training provider if they are not accredited. So the first thing would be to jump on the services CETA, or it also depends on which unit standard you want to do. So finding out which CETA is responsible for the specific unit standard and then go get accreditation from them. And then from there, they can come and apply with us.
And that process, that tedious process that you're talking about of getting accredited, I mean, for us it was a headache. But one thing that I had to, and it confused me, was we're working in an industry where there's practical exposure. You don't work at heights by staying safe on the ground. You're literally climbing. You're performing dangerous activities. There seems to be no control of that element during that process. The CETA, and it's not anything against them. Again, they're busy. It's not in their field of expertise, but they've never ever checked whether or not your facility is safe for climbing. Yes, there might be a scaffold. They haven't checked the equipment. Is that a part that's missing in the CETAs when selecting service providers?
So I think that is actually why SACWA started registering professional bodies, is to assist the CETAs with these type of things. Because there's no way that a certain body can be an expert on, like you said, it's hairdressing, it's all services. CETA is services, so it's all services from funeral parlors to cleaning. It is a wide variety of training, and that's why we make sure, that's why we want the people to use the training providers that is approved by the professional body, because there are training providers that get accreditation somehow, some much faster than others. I'm not sure they get it right, but the ones that do go through the process properly, and then we go and validate and check all the things that the CETA didn't check. For example, is the tower erected by a competent person? Has it been signed off? Is there a fall protection plan? Is there equipment that they use up to standard? Those things.
And I think it would be unfair of us to expect that of the CETAs, if we're being honest. I mean,
sure.
Like you've said, funeral parlor, hairdresser. I know nothing about hairdressers. Now I must go there and tell them how to do their job.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, work at heights in itself is already this kind of pushed away discussion in safety because it's so complex. Now we can't expect a CETA or a body like that to actually have to understand that level. So that's where the RWH comes in, right? You guys would serve that function. That's what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah. So we assist them where they can't perform or able to perform the duties that they have to.
Should the CETAs do annual checks and inspections of their service providers?
So they should. I know they don't, but they should at least do external moderation, which got nothing to do with the equipment. It's a high-risk job that you guys are doing. And for that reason, there has to be, all the measures has to be in place to make sure that everyone is safe. And unfortunately, they don't check that. And that could lapse. If you don't push on something, you don't focus on it, and it sort of falls away. Where the RWH, we do annual, we also do, like, we also call it an external moderation. But in that external moderation, we make sure that all the documents and equipment and so forth is still in place and up to date.
Fantastic. I think it's highly necessary, especially with the beast we deal with.
Mm.
Working at heights, an incident doesn't happen every single day. People become complacent. Unfortunately, yeah. If you've got ill-equipped training facilities, it's quite real that an incident could happen at those facilities.
Yeah.
Cool. So I'm quite strongly opinionated from a safety point. And when we started our training facility, the opinion was we would rather people leave our training facility understanding the dangers and risks that they will face when they go out versus give somebody a certificate. It's generally been our approach, just because if that person leaves, we've got no more control or no ability to say, no, but remember to connect there and be safe. With work at heights being such a practical function, do you see the training providers that are accredited, and I'm not talking about RWH, that are accredited to CETAs always giving practical training and with appropriate equipment?
So I cannot say for sure what is going on in other training providers, but Work It Out is so big, but the industry is actually really so small. So people talk and people give feedback, and there's a lot of instances or feedback that we got about training providers not really, you know, it's a Brian always say, you sit in a room and have a coffee and a biscuit and off you go. And it is really, it's not even a drug. It's really what's happening. I think some people just don't take the simple, basic Work It Out, night, take it that serious. It is just a money-making thing, a vouch machine, as they call it, to get in and get out and off you go. And that's alarming and it's scary. And it's sad to know that sometime someone might have to lose their life for people to wake up and say, listen, this is not good enough. This is the base of the wider range of work at height, and it should be done properly. So
100%. And I mean, 2 points there. Unfortunately, yes, our industry is, when somebody has an incident, unfortunately, usually it's fatal.
Yeah.
Then people act. But the other element of it is exactly that money-making side of it. I mean, we constantly are challenged from a price point because somebody is able to give a training which isn't necessarily appropriately accredited. The training can take 2 hours where there is no way that you can do a theoretical, a practical, and an assessment within that time frame. How do we fix that? Because that's a huge problem. And
it is.
I don't want to put you in a position that links it to the RWH, but as an industry, how do we fix that? Because it's a big, big risk.
Companies need to educate themselves about what is necessary to look out for when you choose a training provider. The problem is we live in a world where everything is so expensive and everyone wants whatever they want, cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. So when they go and put tenders in, everyone goes lower and lower and lower to get the job. And with going lower and lower and lower, you cut out what is cut out first? Safety. Unfortunately, that is how it is. So it costs money to train and do the right thing. So you have to have proper facilitators, assessors and moderators. As soon as you don't do that, it's cost safe. As soon as you train just half a day, you can train more, whether the training is properly or not. So there, I think the companies need to make sure that the training providers they use do the right thing. And you can't train a person for half a day and upload them. And that is the problem where the companies need to make sure that the training provider do the uploads, make sure external moderation takes place and so forth.
The problem though, and I think it's both sides. So one, they see it as a cost.
Yeah.
Now, if I can spend half the amount of money, bonus. But the other element is, oh, but my team are also only on training for half the amount of time, which does a great disservice to the team because these are the guys that are actually putting their lives at risk. But they don't actually get a say in this. They just get sent to somebody. So how do we speak to those people and let them make a better decision? How do they know how long a training should take?
So they are welcome to contact us or look on to our website for training durations. But the main thing is if you look on the unit standard and it says 2 credits, it should be at least 1 to 2 days. So 1 credit equals 10 notional hours, which is 1 day. So that is how you can figure it out. But then if you look at combined training, for example, 9-8-9-5. So 9-8-9-5 together is 5 credits. But if you train them in one, it could be 3 days. So it all depends. It's unfortunately a tricky situation. So it's better to ask than assume that whatever it's done is right.
But how do they ask? Because they're going to somebody and they've got a safety specialist. And the safety specialist is usually the auditor that has said, listen, you need training to work on the site. Oh, I've got a training facility. How do you suggest that they speak to the professional body? And would that be their safest avenue?
Yeah, I think so. We are the professional body for Work at Height. We want to keep this industry safe and we want to do the best that we can. So email us, ask the question. We are here to help. And we are not here to help only our members or our training providers or the training providers that's registered with us. We are here to service the industry. So they are welcome to phone, send an email. Everyone at the office is always willing to assist where they can.
Fantastic. So personal experience, worked with the company and we gave them training. They were then fighting us on price because that's how it goes. And when we help them, because that's what we do, we partner with companies. We don't just do business and off we go. We said to them, but guys, we don't actually mind. If you find something that's adequate, go there, if that's what it is. And they asked us, cool, come with us and see this. Now, in this case, it's the norm. It's a lifting company that is now offering Work at Height training. So there's two elements here. Let's tackle the first one. Is lifting and Work at Height the same thing?
So the Institute for Work at Height, we've got 7 chambers, which covers access methods. So what do you have to do to reach the point where you have to do your job? So what am I lifting? Am I lifting myself, the person, in a MUP, mobile elevated work platform, then yes. If you're sitting in your truck or whatever and you lift something else, then it is not Work at Height. So, like I said, we are access methods to do your job safely.
Let's switch it around. I've got a background in fall protection. That's my industry. Can I go be an LMI and start doing lifting?
No.
Why not?
Because there is a different program for lifting machine operators.
And that was the company we're dealing with. So it's a lifting machinery operator then that gives the training that then also give Work at Height training.
Okay. You see, you know what happens? Training providers would be accredited for something. And then they piggyback on that accreditation and say, I am accredited with TITA, for example. And because people aren't educated, they don't know what to look for. They say, they see, okay, they're accredited. Great, 9-8. But they don't understand that 9-8, for example, does not lie with TITA. So they are accredited, fantastic, but not for the right unit standards. And that is what, like I said earlier, you need to make sure that the unit standards, the person that wants to be accredited or the person that gets the training must make sure that the training provider is accredited at the right CETA for that specific unit standard.
That's let's talk practical. Are they going to go check and ask all of these different sitters, are they?
There's lots. They're not. Again, make sure with the IWH if you're not sure. But that is really something to look out for. Like you say, they're not going to check, but it is an important thing to check.
Great. So the short answer is refer to the IWH because they'll be able to make sure that their providers have gone through the appropriate sitters and been accredited appropriately.
Yeah. I think make sure, ask them for their, if you want to go with a training provider, ask them for their accreditation. On your accreditation letter, it says for which unit standards the provider is accredited for. So if it says they're with TITA and you want to do 22998, the 22998 will not be on that accreditation letter. And that's how you know that they are not accredited. Maybe a training provider can be accredited with multiple CETAs. So make sure that you ask the right questions and get proof.
But I don't think it's that easy. I mean, you know what to look for. You've dealt with the CETAs. What we've had to help clients with is you'll get a service provider that gives you a full program that they are accredited to. And one of the elective,
yes.
Explain that to us, because what is the elective that they can choose?
So a qualification is made up of core, elective, fundamentals and electives. Although it's changing at the moment, but for now, the accreditation that the training providers have is if you do apply for accreditation and you apply for a full qualification, you have to offer all the core unit standards and the elective unit standards and then the fundamental unit standards, and then you can choose which electives you want to offer as the training provider. So if you chose those electives, it should be on your accreditation letter. But we also get training providers that did not apply for accreditation for full qualifications, that only applied for unit standards. So whatever they are accredited for, they must have proof of it. So if there's a letter with the full qualification, you can ask them, you want to see for which unit standards they are accredited for. There's a qualification in cleaning. I think there's two qualifications with services CETA that has most of the work at height range. Then there is the plant operator or some sort of qualification.
Let's just use the cleaning one. For me, there's a problem. I know nothing about cleaning.
Mm.
My team, we've got a highly technical team that study, that live, work at heights, that know nothing about that.
Yeah.
But I have seen on our registration documents, our CETA documents, that we've got this elective of cleaning or hygiene. Or now let's make it really simple. Somebody has applied for a training standard, which is cleaning. Does that really give them the ability to do this elective unit standard?
See, that's the problem with we're picking this up quite often now, that training providers applied for accreditation for the qualification. They get registered for accreditation. And there wasn't, I mean, because work at height is such a specialization, unfortunately, the CETA doesn't look into that specialization. They look at the full qualifications. Like you said, you have no idea about cleaning, but they only see the cleaning aspect. So they go and make sure that the training provider is accredited and can do cleaning, but they don't focus on the specific aspect of work at height. Can he do his job and be safe? Can you train him to be clean and be safe?
If it's, let's talk 22998, which is your basic fallerist, and that's part of the elective. I get the fundamental part is cleaning quite often in food and beverage happens at heights. Fine. I understand how that's linked. But just because somebody knows how to clean does not mean they know how to get there safely, or in my opinion, should not be authorized to make sure somebody else that they're not even, it's their client, that they're training them to work at heights.
And unfortunately, we get training providers that is accredited for those unit standards without having someone actually properly look at the work at height part of that qualification. So now they think they are accredited for these unit standards. I'm going to make money and I'm going to train. And unfortunately, everything we go, it all comes back to money. Everyone wants to make money. So they are accredited for those for that unit standard, but they don't even have a scaffold to train the people on. They're not prepared for it at all. So they put their fingers out and see if it's going to work, and then they go for it. And then they realize, oh, goodness, I'm not equipped actually for this, or they just carry on.
No, I don't think they even realize. I think they just carry on and they run the courses until somebody shouts loud enough that my people don't even know how to put on a harness.
Yeah.
But the reality is, it's twofold. It's one, the service provider is doing something that is out of their depth and out of their specialization, if you can call it that. But two is it's not being spoken about enough, or it's not being policed well enough to make sure that, hold on, you're offering a high-risk training where somebody that puts on a harness incorrectly, something as simple as that, if they fall, they die. But we don't make a noise because people are saving money or people are making money, and there's a huge gap there. Do you think the IWH will ever work or successfully work towards that? Do you think you guys are?
Oh, we're trying. We're trying. We've got actually a lot of people or companies that's buying into us, and that's understanding what we are trying to do. That is busy telling their clients that you need to be IWH registered because they see the value in what we are trying to do. But there will always be those training providers out there that gets away with it, unfortunately.
Cool. And I've also noticed that quite often the person that's procured the training only find out once they've got the certification that maybe it's inappropriate, or it's maybe doesn't have whatever detail it has to have for the specific training.
So the CETA is supposed to approve your certificate, the training provider certificate that they can issue, but they cannot issue a certificate of competence without having external moderation. So you can, the training provider after training is only allowed to give a certificate of attendance, and then after external moderation has taken place, then they can send out a certificate of competence. There's also not allowed to be an expiry date on the certificate because your qualification can never expire, but your designation can. They also only the one CETA that is appropriate for that training is allowed to be, the logo is allowed to be on there. And I see a lot of the training providers, some add all the CETAs. The wower it looks, the more credibility it gives them, they think. So we are issuing designations because the guy needs to go on site and do his job safely and competent. So that is why we allow our training providers to train, give a temporary license to operate, and we do our own quality assurance on the back in the background, and then they can give them their license to operate, which is the designation. But the training provider still needs to make sure that they do upload to the CETA, they do get external moderation to receive the guy's qualification to show that he's competent in his qualification.
Okay, let's just take one step back. You mentioned something quite vital there. Before you can give a certificate, there needs to be an external moderation. Explain to us what that is.
So external moderation takes place with the CETA, where they come and do their quality check, making sure that there was actually a learner. The learner did fill in a PIE. Everything that the learner did was above board, and he is actually competent in everything, in his tests, practical tests. All that proof of the learner competency needs to be there, and they come and check.
And what do they do with that? So they, let's step by step, they come out, they do their external moderation. What happens next from the CETA?
They upload onto the NLRD if they find everything is above board and all the learners are competent, they upload on the NLRD. So there's a NLRD for qualifications and a NLRD for designations. So the learner can go and on SACWA's website and type in the very, I think it's very verify practitioner or something like that and verify whether the learner is on the NLRD or not. And that's how me and you can go, if you've done any qualifications, you can go and check on NLRD whether all the unit standards qualifications that you've done is on there. And that is only when actually, when that is done, that's the final step, you are deemed competent.
And that's when you would get your statement of results, right?
Yes.
So statement of results. Now, are you, as a training provider, can I issue a certificate without that statement? Because that statement is meant to indicate, right, that this person is competent or not competent. Okay, so currently as it stands, for somebody to be issued a certificate, an external moderation needs to have happened?
Yes. Yeah. The external moderation from CETA side needs to happen, and they upload the results to the NLRD.
What's the chances of me getting the CETA in quickly, just while the person is doing their course, quickly getting them in to come do an external moderation so I can issue that person with a certificate before they leave?
No chance. It is quite a tricky situation getting the CETAs to come for external moderation. I'm assuming that they are very busy. But we ask our training providers to make sure that you constantly ask for them to come for external moderation. If you can show proof of that, that it you did everything from your side to ask for external moderation.
But the point is, I can't train somebody today and issue them with a certificate.
No, not with a certificate of competence. You can say that they attended the class, but not a certificate of competence. But like I said, you can give them a temporary permit to operate. After we've done all our quality, we send out the training providers upload to us, and we do send them then a certificate of competence for their designation, not the qualification, and a permit to operate. That is valid for 3 years, but for mobile elevated work platforms, it's for 2 years.
Okay, quickly, just correct me if I'm wrong. My understanding is I went to matric. I didn't have to redo matric. Is that the idea with unit standards not having to be retrained?
So you need to be current in what you do, especially for us, for you guys. Work at heart is high risk. So you need to know that this guy can still do his job safely. So you did your matric now, but will you be able to write a maths exam now?
No, I couldn't even do it there.
So that's why we call some, we've got CPD programs that our training providers do to make sure that the learners are still current and we check them. So that's why there's professional bodies for the healthcare, for doctors and for CAs and so forth. So you do your training, you're competent, you've got your qualification and your designation. So now there's a person that maybe doesn't have a job for 6 months or a year, and he goes back and he wants to carry on working. Is he still competent? Can he still safely operate? Is he still healthy? The guys need to go for medical, specifically for work at heart. So is he still healthy to do this? So we've got our training providers that do CPD programs to see if they are still operating safely, and then they issue licenses. And that's why we also tell the training, the learners or the companies to check that training providers don't issue certificates with expiry dates, because it's, again, a money-making thing. So they come back, they pay for the full course, they do the full training, which is not necessary because they do... they have the fundamentals, the basic knowledge. We just need to know that the guy is able to do it safely. He still can do his job safely without putting anyone in danger.
Cool. So you're saying I don't have to go back and do matric again?
No, luckily.
Thank goodness. Yeah. But now how I see it is we issue them with a license.
Yes.
And is that where you're talking about? The license is there for... it's not to double check on people, but somebody doesn't work for 2 years, they forget to put on a harness.
Yeah.
We need to pick that up, right?
Yeah.
And that license then expires after a 3-year period.
Yeah.
And then that needs to be recertified just to double check.
Yes.
Is this person still current? Has there been changes, right?
Yeah.
Because
legislation, industry change.
Industry best practices, there's constantly changes.
Yeah. And people also, that's the one side of it. People that does the job every day, the same thing over and over, get complacent also. So it's a nice, so when they do come for CPD, so a CPD course can be a refresher. It could be something else that benefits the learner. And with that, the training providers do a reassessment to make sure that, and it's a nice refresher for them to just make sure that they still remember to do the small things. Because when you do something over and over, you start to get comfortable and do some things that
driving.
Is reckless.
Nobody still drives K53.
Yes. Yeah.
So, but we need to make sure that K53 and not having your hands at, 10 and 3 isn't going to kill you versus not being able to put a harness on or making sure a carabiner's closed.
Yeah. For sure.
Okay, so that's what does CPD mean? You're talking like we should all know this.
What is it? It's like I said, continual professional development. So anything that can benefit the learner. So for example, the guy is just a 9.8 guy, and like you said, legislation changed, or the company that he works for got new equipment and they need training on this equipment, is a nice program to do to introduce these changes or these new equipment that he's going to have to work with. So anything that could benefit the learner, continual professional development.
Basically building on their foundation, and the unit standard would almost be the foundation.
Sure, yeah.
Okay. Tommy, the LNQs that you mentioned earlier, what is that?
So it is a program that we identified that should have been a unit standard. So a few years ago, we went to SACWA and said, listen, for example, ladders. Ladders is a big thing. Most of the accidents, work at height accidents that's happening is people falling off ladders. We identified that this should be proper training. And because I'm sure a lot of you guys know, unit standards of qualifications are expiring. So there is replacements, and there is some that has not have replacements yet. But we asked them if we can develop these unit standards, and they didn't want to allow us because they knew what's happening, what's coming. So SACWA gave us the go-ahead to register LNQs, learning not qualification. So we treat it like it's a unit standard, but it doesn't get uploaded to the CETA, so it doesn't get uploaded onto the NLRD. But it's registered with us. That we follow the same procedure. It needs to be a registered assessor and needs to be moderated and externally moderated by us to make it a proper program and have competency for these people that trains on it. We make sure that before we register LNQ, that there is really not a unit standard that could have been used for it.
Okay.
So for ladders, There is nothing else. For another example is TSP operators, so temporary suspended work platforms. So there is no training to teach the learner how to operate on those things either. So that's where we registered. These guys need to be trained properly. There is nothing that can possibly be used, or no unit standard that can possibly be used to train these guys on, and that is when we develop a program for them.
Okay, so CPD, you need the foundational unit standard or designation. LNQ, I would then assume sometimes, would there be a prerequisite on some of them?
Yeah. So it depends on what unit standard or what the LNQ program is. So we've got prerequisites for some of them and
TSP,
some of them that
TSP,
doesn't.
I would assume you need to know how to connect properly because you're working off of a moving platform.
Sure, yeah. But okay, we've got it, for example, we've got a TSP operator, user operator, and erector. So for you to do the LNQ for erector, you will have to do operator. We've got a climbing equipment inspector. So you have to know 9.8 at least to be able to do the inspector, because that is the introduction to work at height. But it's not for all the programs that there will be a work at height related prerequisite.
Okay, fantastic. Like confined space.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Nazani, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate what you and the RWH are doing.
Thank you.
And yeah, I think you guys are moving in the right direction and trying to make sure the industry does.
Definitely. Thanks, Dylan. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us, and I hope this episode added value to you. If you are experiencing any safety challenges on your sites and require any additional information, please do leave us a message on LinkedIn via Protector Safety Gear's page, or alternatively follow the link below and share a message with us, because maybe it can create value or valuable conversation for future episodes. Be sure to also follow us on LinkedIn. There will be some valuable information shared from today's discussion.